This is the Saturday Night Live Friday speaker meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous held at Westgate West in San Jose, California on June the 30th, 2000. Our speaker is Ian E. of San Jose, California. The original recording of this meeting is kept in the SNL tape library. Please observe the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous and do not play this recording for commercial or entertainment purposes. Please do not break the anonymity of the speakers or any other AA member at the public level. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Ian and I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. How are you guys doing tonight? I'm really nervous. This is my very first speaker meeting, so if I say a lot of uhs and ums and all that other stuff, so anyway, I'd like to welcome all the newcomers and the court cards, and there's a lot of court cards, so I'd like to welcome you all. Let you know that we're not affiliated with the courts. We're just doing you a favor by signing your card for you, and if you want, you can go and get drunk and sign them yourself, because the drunker you get, your signature changes, so nobody will know the difference except for you. And I'll probably get in trouble for saying that from somebody. But also, I'd like to say that God up there, the higher power thing, my God is my God, not yours. If you want to borrow him, you're more than welcome, but he's mine, all mine, and I can cuss to him, and he knows what I'm talking when I say fuck and God in the same sentence. He understands all languages, and profanity is a language. It's in the dictionary. And he understands it. The reason I say that is the last few weeks I've heard a lot of newcomers getting upset about hearing God and profanity in the same sentence. You know, it's your God. You talk to him the way you want. And if I have to use foul language in that to let him know how I feel, to get my point across, that's what I have to do. To let you know where I came from, I'm a California born down in San Diego. And I started my drinking shortly after I was about 5 years old. I would get drinks from my father. He'd ask me to go get a beer for him, you know, and I'd get it for him. And I'd start drinking on it, you know, a little sip here and there. And by the time the beers got to him, they were half empty. And then I started learning quick what the feeling, you know. I started feeling warm and good, you know. And I'm saying that word a lot, huh? And I'm nervous, man. My face all red? Yeah. That's red anyway, but I know it's even redder now. I don't know. It was really good. I remember we lived in Texas for a while when I was a kid, and we'd sit on the back of my dad's station wagon, and he'd be drinking, and I'd go and get him a beer, and, you know, late at night it's hot, you know. And as I got older, I would get two beers, and by the time I got from the refrigerator to the car, there was only one in my hand. And I learned quick how to drink beer. When I got later on in high school and stuff, I was kind of, you know, that I was the odd man out. And I was outright, I was a geek, you know. I was one of those guys who wore a leather jacket, kind of like those trench coat guys in Colorado. Long hair. You know, wear a leather jacket, Levi's t-shirt. It could be 90 degrees outside, and that leather jacket's not coming off, you know. So I did shower every night. And that was kind of like my whole school was like that, hanging out with the fellas at the park, you know, drinking and smoking joints, you know, and acid came around, and, you know, oh, man, that window pane was the best. I don't know if anybody knows where the Santa Clara Library is and by Santa Clara High School. Man, I tweaked on them squirrels in that park a lot. Yeah. Freshman year, man, that's what it was happening. Birds and squirrels, man. Whoa. Had a great time, you know. And I was kind of lucky because my folks by this time had already been divorced. I shouldn't say divorced. They were separated. My father is a Skid Row alcoholic. He died Skid Row. He got hit on the head and never woke up one day. Got mugged for, I think it was $5. They figured that was the only thing he had at the time. He was, unfortunately, he was a genius. He designed the heat shields on the space shuttle. You know, so, you know, smart people kind of running the family, how they use their brains is kind of wrong. You know, so we're all alcoholics as far back as I can go. In the family tree, we're all drunk or stoned or, you know, or white supremacists or, you know, they're all Nazis. I got a German background. You know, and we know what drunks those guys are, you know. And I'm not, but they are. but Dad, he was pretty fucked up. I remember one time I got beat for not eating my breakfast right one day. And, you know, that was normal stuff in my house. You know, he'd be drinking, you know, his beer or wine or whiskey, whatever, at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. And he was always there, drunk. And that's where I learned how to get drunk. And I learned how to be by myself with him, from him. And, I'm like totally scattered here. But the last time I saw my father, I kicked his ass. He hit me, punched me, and I said, "You hit me one more time, and that's it. We're going for it." And he squared off, and we went for a round or two, and that was it. He was bleeding, and then I left, and I went on about my business. I was 17 when it happened, and just went out and became who I thought I was supposed to be without a father, and do what I got to do. Joined the military, quit school, said, "Fuck this, I'm not going to school." And school sucks. Got in the Army, and they said, "Well, you got to go back to school." You know, and we don't take dropouts here. So, you know, back to school I went. That was a lot of fun. But I really got off in the military. I was a Rambo kind of guy. You know, did all the jumping out of the airplanes and helicopters, and, you know, did the Panama thing, and, you know, went, you know, jungle training, airborne training, ranger training, did all that stuff. Ended up. My last part of my career, I was married. I was married. Anyway, I did some training with the SEALs down in Coronado, and ended up a sniper for them, and down in South America for a while. And I'd go on maneuvers, and I'd tell my wife that, "Oh, we're just going down to Southern California, and we're going on maneuvers and stuff." And in truth, we were going to South America and places like that to do covert operations and stuff. I just shared that with her too, just about a year ago. A lot of stuff there I didn't like. I also, speaking of the military, one of the guys here asked me to bring in some of those pictures, you know, that we always take that we're not supposed to. And I'm going through these pictures and stuff, and, you know, that was the loneliest time of my life. You know, the drinking that I did, and, you know, drugs was kind of like one of those things you don't do, but drinking, man, that's all we did. We get done with the mission, and we were drunk, and we were drunk until the next mission, you know, and that's the way it always was. And it didn't get later until I got married, until I started bringing drugs around and stuff. You know, go down to Columbia, it's supposed to be burning cocaine and stuff, and you're bringing a pound home with you, you know? Stuff like that. They kind of frown on that, especially when you get caught. And they just kind of ask, you know, we'll put you back in your unit. You just stay away from us. Go play G.I. Joe over there, you know, and you're no longer part of this organization and stuff. And then I got attitude and started, I was doing crank big time by that time. And couldn't get enough of crank. Yeah, speed boy, some go fast, let's do it. Yeah. Go for the gusto, man. I can go to sleep anytime, but, you know, I know I'm going to miss something today, so let's stay up and catch it all. Yeah. I think the longest, my longest run was almost, 8 days or something like that? 7, 8, 10 days? 10 days, the calendar. And but I knew I was going to miss something. I remember waking up many a times passed out on the ground after shooting a line or, you know, slamming a line or crank or something, you know, and gone. And wake up from, you know, just from sheer exhaustion. But anyway, I got kicked out of the Army eventually, and because of drugs and alcohol, and my wife, and how do you put this nicely, because she's in the room. She didn't want me to be in the military anymore. There we go. You know, I was gone 3/4 of the month I was out doing some type of military G.I. Joe crap. And she just, you know, first year marriage, you know, I need my husband here with me kind of thing. So anyway, I got out. And we really jumped into taking care of business, you know, drinking every night. She was pregnant. You know what? There's a bar down the street. We got to stop every night on the way home from work, have a drink. And by this time, like I said, I was doing major crank. And so was she. Actually, I was kind of like, I'd give her a little spoonful, you know, a little for her, a little for me, a little more for me, a little for her, a little more for me, you know, and just kept her in her tequila sunrises, you know, that's okay. Orange juice is okay when you're pregnant, you know. So, but you know, as soon as I had that baby, man, I could not keep that woman out of my bag for nothing, man. She was there. I mean, like, it's like, you know, I want my own bag. I want my own mirror. I want my own razor blade. You know, hey, hook me up. And so we really started getting into drugs and work. And I had my own business by this time. And it, of course, I worked nights. I had my own janitorial business, you know. And you got to hustle work during the day. So you got to stay up during the day. And you got to work at night. And, you know, it just continued on. I got hooked up. About two weeks ago was when Mark Hudson asked me to share this meeting, and everything's been coming up that I used to do, all the memory things, you know, and I didn't even remember that back in the day when I went to the mafia, the Bonanno Mafia here in town, and asked for work. Now, how many people do that, you know? You know, hey, you got anything for me to do? You know, and you know, I went to the Hells Angels. My brother-in-law hooked me up with some Hells Angels connections. You know, hey, you know, you need anybody taken care of? You know, let's go. You know, and at the time, I remember I totally said, nah, you know what? That's only one way to get out of that business. You can't retire. There's no retirement plan at all. There's no health plan. You know, you die or you do it. You know what I mean? You kick ass or you die. One or the other. And it was just a flash. Sorry about that. But you know, and because I was thinking, you know, if I was done that, they would have killed me a long time ago. Because the kind of dope fiend and alcoholic I was, I'd have drank so much, just killed the wrong person, or robbed the wrong bank, or you know, or picked up, you know, broke the wrong guy's arm or something. You know, it just that was my style. You know, we made a lot of geographics when we were out there. We made 26 in 5 years, 26 moves. The reason we figured it out because she had a 10-year class reunion, and they asked how many times somebody had moved, and 26 times. And we ended up in Escondido with her parents, living at her mom's house. And we figured, well, you know what, we'll just move away from San Jose, get away from the drugs and all the people we know. You know, we grew up here. We go down there, we'll start all over. You know, start with the mom's house. It'll help us get it started. You know that bullshit. You know, it wasn't 6-8 months. I'd hooked up with some people at the store. You know, and they were partiers. You know, we'd go over their house, and you know, they were what I call normie. You know, a quarter for a weekend, and that was it. You know, a couple of bottles of wine. You know, and maybe you know some tequila shots later on in the evening, and that was the end of it. You know, as soon as I hooked up with this one girl, she was a hairdresser or something. Anyway, and I couldn't find out her boyfriend was the... Not anything like that. No. Okay. Easy now. Okay, I worked at this place down in San Diego called Lawrence Welk Village. I don't know if anybody's heard of it. It's a little retirement community, you know. Seriously, this is when we were supposed to be getting good, okay? And then there was a little mall there, and they had a... beauty salon. There we go. And they had a little bakery, you know, a theater, and a grocery store. I worked in the grocery store, and these people would come in at lunchtime and get things from me. And she offered some crank, you know, and then off you go. You know, I always find my own level, and I try to do it as fast as possible. You know, water does seek its own level, and dope fiends seek their own level, and so I did, and we hooked up with her, and then I hooked up with her dope dealer, you know, and then the party began. And it was a really pretty good party. It lasted for about, 2.5, 3 years, about 2 years. And it was straight on party. I finally got in an argument with her stepfather. He, you know, pulled a gun on me and asked me to leave. And then I was going to stab him when he wasn't looking, you know, all that stuff. Had a butterfly knife. You know, this guy needs to die. And the whole dysfunctional family thing there, you know. The 2 nights before, we were slamming crank in the back room, like, you know, up all night tweaking and getting all geeked out in the back. Like he didn't have, a reason to be an asshole to me anyway. Don't want to justify the fact that he's an asshole, but he didn't have to pull a gun on me. Jeez. Well, it didn't. It didn't have to. But he's got his in the end anyway. He's a lonely old guy and nobody wants anything to do with him. I'm still nervous. The party would really got on. We started moving around, got kicked out. We're underneath this tree. Pepper tree over by this old Kmart and stuff. We pulled the car underneath it, and of course the clutch is going out on the car on the way up on the getaway out of the driveway, and we're staying underneath this tree. And I got a camouflage. I got limbs cut off the tree. It looked pretty good, you know. I'm surprised the cops saw us. You know, we set up house underneath this tree, and I just scored a job. You know, it's like I said, we were trying to get good now, and. And things started working out, you know. Just as soon as the cops pulled up, I just walked up just about the same time, and, you know, and got that all squared away. We had stayed in a motel, and motels have been the fact of my life. I've been there so many times. Lived in the King's Highway over on the El Camino for a while. You know, that is a wonderful cockroach hotel, man. Oh, it is nasty. But it's dry and it's warm, in the wintertime. We got wonderful. We started partying again and got the job, and turned out, you know, of course, like I said, you always find your own level, and hooked up with all the crank users and partiers at work. And it was a painting outfit, and we did the parking lots, striped all the parking lots and stuff like that. And you know, those guys, they work all of them weird hours, and the foremans are always the best, you know, connection anyway. Get the guys to work harder, do lines, you know, and get the job done sooner so you can work harder, so you can do more work, and you can do more lines, you know, and just get anyway, I'm like losing it. So where was I? Okay, anyway, got good for a while. We got us a little trailer, a little 8x15 trailer. We were living down at San Onofre Beach. I don't know if everybody's been to San Onofre Beach. It's a pretty nice little place. They got two beaches, north and south, and every 2 weeks you have to move. And I think we paid $28-$30 a week for rent, you know, and they got the hot showers and stuff. So, and security, you got a ranger on call. And we had this old Pinto station wagon, you know, that had been flipped that we paid bank for. I think we paid like $400 for this flipped station wagon, you know, and it pulled that little old trailer, you know. The car wouldn't do more than 50 miles an hour. I mean, a definite doping car. And life was getting really good. I mean, you know, I had a hot shower every night, and things were good, you know. We were partying with the people at the beach every night, you know, a big bonfire every night, you know. And the whole time, we were drunk. You know, going to work every day, drunk, wake up drunk. You know, the wife's drunk, the kid's drunk, the neighbors are drunk, we're all drunk, having a good time, and geez, you'd be surprised the people you meet in campgrounds. You'd be surprised. Yeah, there are some strange, yeah, some of you are here tonight. geez. And anyway, we decided one day that we were gonna pack everything up, and come back to San Jose and do another geographic and get good, and you know what, and we'll start getting cleaned up, and we'll only use and drink on the weekends, you know just the casual slam crank on Friday and Saturday nights, and then another rest of the week, okay? Just casual drinking, you know, just enough to get you through the day and, you know, go to work. And we came back and my sister says, well, you know what, we're doing this A&A thing here and you got to get sobriety if you want to hang out here. And, you know, we got 30 days. You know, we said, well, let's try it out. You know, 30 days, we partied, got our welfare check, you know, and off we went back up to the campgrounds up in Saratoga Springs. We had a hell of a party up there. That's when it started. And the big party started. And, of course, like I said, we met people at the campground again, you know. She was stealing this guy's dope. And I was like, he'd get high and say, hold this so I don't smoke it. And she's like, yeah. Yeah, I got some hash tonight, you know. And then he'd come back and say, man, you smoked it, dude. You know? Yeah, yeah. And, and that started a 6-month run for us. And in that 6-month run, we made up for the 30 days of sober time that we had. And we went from, for me, the drinking for me, I went from drinking the occasional beer here and there. And I had used to keep a bottle of Southern Comfort in the refrigerator. I liked mine iced. And went from that to about a half gallon of Jack Daniels a day. Between the two of us, and Jack Daniels, had to be Jack Daniels. You know, that rot gut shit just not cutting it, you know what? We moved back to Escondido, and we moved into mobile home park, or excuse me, travel trailer park. You know, we had a nice look, moved into another travel trailer. We love trailers. Yeah, no, we do love trailers. We just bought a mobile home. Damn, go figure out. Got a little something going there, huh? But trailers and wheels and mobile. anyway, we really went downhill. It just, that incomprehensible demoralization happened. It was everything. Everything you can think of in that 6-month time happened. And you take everything you can think of right now, the worst things you thought of, jails, institutions, all those nasty, dirty deeds, bank robbery, the whole nine yards. I was there. I was doing it, you know. And I thought it was fun. This is having a good time. And then one day I woke up, literally woke up, came to, and all that was there was me, the wife, and a campground in a pup tent trailer. Excuse me, a pup tent. Little pup tent. You know, a little 3-man pup tent. And I'd been up for I don't know how long. I couldn't, you know, I didn't want to get up. Didn't want to, don't bother me. Told her to get me something to eat. You know, I'm hungry. And all there was to eat was some strawberry cake ice cream and crackers. And that was it for food. And I told her, you know what, you go do what you got to do. I need some dope. I need some drugs. I don't care what you got to sell your ass. I don't care. Get me my shit now. And I don't know what, I went back to bed and figured I'll wait till, you know, I'll sleep until she gets back. And when she got back, she said, this is the way it's going to be. You know what? We're going to try and go back to San Jose. We're going to get sobriety. We're going to try the A&A thing out for a while. And if you don't want any part of this, you need to be on your way. And that's not, might not be what she said, but that's what I heard. And, so that's what we did. Called my mom for some help. Mom, right off, said, screw off. I have nothing to do with you. Burn that bridge. And end up calling one of my little sisters. Matter of fact, my little sister, the baby. And she called for some money, get some tickets. She goes, well, I won't send you any money, but I'll call the bus station and put some tickets on you in your name. And she did. And that was tough, just calling her to say, hey, you know, baby sister, you know, damn, ego is gone, you know. And she hooked us up, and we came back to San Jose. And when we came back, the only place for us to go, because none of our family would have anything to do with us, was Agnew State Hospital. They had a family living shelter. I don't know if anybody knows about that place. It's gone now. But the shelter was, like I said, for families. And we got this little cockroach-infested psycho ward room. They had round corners and everything, you know. You know, had a little peephole in the door that they had covered up. It was actually a psycho ward, you know. And cockroach infested again, you know, like I never had lived with cockroaches before, you know. And I didn't want to be there. Don't you know who I am? I deserve more than this. I've got five sisters. One of them should be able to at least kick down with, you know, living on their couch or something. And we lived there for 6 weeks. You know, and every day we had to do our certain amount of chores. We had to clean up around this place. And we were supposed to go out and look for work and get, you know, get on your way. All I did was go to the park, sleep, hang out, collect my welfare check, and started drinking a little bit. And that's all I did, you know, because that's what I knew. And we got kicked out of there, and we were in a motel, and another motel. And it wasn't King's Highway. We said, well, we're too good for that place, you know. We'll go down to the other whorehouse down the street, and we'll stay down there, you know. We got there, and my sister come pulling up, and she says, you know, I've talked to Mom. Mom said you can come stay with her, but you have to go to AA. You have to get a job. You have to, you know, you have to be good, you know. And I was like, well, at first I was like, well, I don't know how to do this. You know, and she said, my sister, the one that I, you know, the oldest sister too, of course, the one you can't stand, you know, says, don't worry, you know, we'll take care of it. You know, my brother-in-law, who at the time was just had about a year and a half in the program, and he said he'd hook me up, you know, we'll go to meetings, we'll take care of you, we'll show you how to do this. And that's where it started. I started at Alano East, sitting in the back with Danny O'Connor, and listening to him, those guys, these old timers, old timers with 2 or 3 years at the time, you know, talking trash on how wonderful things are, and you know, and how you got to do your first step, the step before the step, and you know, and how you got to do a righteous third step, and you know, and it scared the shit out of me. I'll tell you right off, didn't want no part of that. So I found another meeting. You know, the Lotto Club, we ain't had no party. Let's go to Saturday Night Live. It's room 47. It's on the way home. And when I went there the first time, there must have been 250 people in the meeting. And at a 6 o'clock meeting. And, you know, nobody saw me. You know, I stood up as a newcomer, and the people around introduced themselves, but nobody saw me, which was really good, because I didn't want any part of you people. You know, because I only came here to learn how to drink and use, and that was it. I'm going to learn how to do this thing on the weekend. On the way back from, on the way up from San Escondido, my wife and I, we talked, and we said, hey, we'll go to AA, and we'll learn how to drink. We'll only do it on Saturdays and Sundays. This way, Monday, when we got time to go to work, you know, that's all good. And that's all I came here for, and I'm still here for that reason. Yeah? I'm sorry. Yeah? I got a few things now, but you know what? I'm still waiting to learn how to drink. You know, they keep telling me just don't drink today, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. And from right now, that's good enough for me. You know, and that's what got me through a lot. You know, was just not drinking for today, and I had a sponsor who I had to call every day, and then finally we got to do the steps, and then I finally did my fourth step. You know, and I did a third step in his living room that. You know, I thought he was a faggot when he asked me to hold his hands and stuff. You know, what's up with this? Get on my knees with you and do what? You know? And I heard this stuff in the meetings and stuff, and I'm like, this ain't happening, you know? And I knew for sure it was a Jesus freak thing, you know? Holy rollers, Hare Krishna, or something's going to happen here. You know? Knew something, you know? And when we did the third step, and that was it, you know? And he goes, now go home and practice the third step prayer every day. And I was like, that's it? You know, there's no, what's the religious dunking in water, you know, and all that stuff? You know, he says, we don't do that here. You know, you just pray to God, and this is your alcoholic prayer. He goes, you can say all the other prayers you want, but this is your alcoholic one. And that's what I did. And I got feeling pretty good one day. I'm starting to work and stuff, and I'm on the construction site. At this time, I was a yard dog on a construction site. And it was raining on Friday, like, you know, like it does on Friday, of course. And we got our checks, and I went to hang out with the fellas till the check cashing place opened. And the beers came out. You know, and I'm thinking, you know what? I know I'm a dope fiend. I know I have the hardest time passing up drugs. So I won't use dope, but I'll have a beer. I can do that. You know, and I've heard people in these meetings say, you know what? They can do that. You know, and it's in the book. It says we take our hat off to those people who can drink and, you know, and not have a problem, you know, and put the drink down and just be on their way. And I knew that was me. I could do that. And about 20 minutes later, the mirror went by and the crank went by. And this is all at 5 o'clock in the morning, mind you. And I said, no, I'm not doing any lines. Not doing it. And then somebody mentioned, hey, you mind if I fix in your bathroom? And that was all it took for me. And I was in there. By the end of the day, I had used up about $400 worth of my paycheck. Had slammed a little over a crank, eight ball of crank, and gone through about a half gallon of Jack Daniels and was not high and was not drunk. I could not get where I wanted to be. And I was pissed. I even brought some home for the wife, though. Because, you know, when you get cranked up, you know, you need somebody to party with. You know, and take it home with the wife. We're going to party tonight, have a good time. You know, and yeah, you know, and she's like, get that fucking shit away from me. Fuck, man, I had never been ripped up so bad in my life, man. This woman just tore me apart. And but I finished the dope. I finished drinking my drink and stuff. You know, I'm proud of myself for that, you know. But you know what? I share this occasionally. I was on the way home from the bar. I was hanging out with these guys that day, and I was on the bus because I was, you know, one of those high bottom drunks. And I got off. I saw the pink poodle, and I wanted to fix some dope. And you know, the only place to fix dope on a bus is in a bathroom or something, or the pink poodle. They got the peep shows. They're free. You go in, close the door, and I'm doing my thing, and I look in the mirror. And that's when I actually felt and saw incomprehensible demoralization, when I saw myself then and there. You know, and it was that, you know, that icky feeling you get, you know, you're just like, oh my God, that was it. That was it. I knew I didn't want to be there anymore. Didn't want to go there. And but I don't know, I just had that thing, you know, you got to finish the bag. And I did, like I say. And the next morning I went to a meeting. It was a men's meeting. It was on a Saturday, and I've been here ever since. My first couple years were like I say, bonehead AA, and I would come, I would do what my sponsor told me, you know, and only what my sponsor told me. If he said read to the ABCs, I read to the ABCs. I didn't read any further. You know, he said go do his inventory, go do it. I did my inventory. And I brought it to him. He goes, it's wrong. Go do it again. And I went and I did it again. And I shared it with them. I actually did my four step in two parts because I had a hard time with the information that I didn't want anybody to know about. And so I did mine, like I said, in two parts. I did the part where I didn't care anybody heard about, and I did the part where the nasty stuff. And at the end, when I was, if I felt comfortable with it, I was going to give it to them, and I did. And I gave it all to them. I didn't keep any secrets at all. I gave it all. And that, I think, was the best for me because I had nothing left to give. You know, it was gone. There was no more drinking, no more drugging for me. And I continued on with coming to Saturday Night Live. I went every day for, I think it was 3.5 years, we came to a meeting. They say that the sick people come every day, and I believe I'm definitely one of those sick people. I know I'm a dope fiend, but Saturday Night Live was one of the few places that they would talk recovery. I would go to the other place, and I'd always leave with a desire to get high and get drunk every time. So I stuck it out here at Saturday Night Live. And, you know, life got good for me. I started getting shit, you know, started getting, you know, visas and cars. And, you know, when you just get sober, you get stuff. You just stop drinking and you'll get stuff. And and I was working like 60 hours a week and just doing the old, you know, going to work, you know, and if you work hard, you play hard, you know, so you work 60, 70 hours a week, come home and sleep Saturday and do something on Sunday and go back to work. And, well, one day I found myself not going to meetings and found myself up in San Francisco watching a dope dealer selling his dope, you know, and they got the syringe exchange thing up there in San Francisco, and I walked over to the ATM, got the money out, and walked over to the dope dealer, and he's like, well, what do you want? And I'm all, I need to make a phone call. I'll be right back. And I went and called my sponsor and got back in the program. You know, and I gave it all back up to him, you know, told him where it was at. And he was like, well, I've been waiting for you to call me. You know, and So I'm back in the program. I'm doing meetings every day. I went 2.5 years without going to meetings. And I don't recommend it. You know, it's tough. And, you know, and I worked. My job was my higher power. You know, and that's all I did was work. I didn't really do much anything. If we did anything, it was like a Saturday or a Sunday, go to Reno or, you know, and charge everything on the Visa and get in debt and, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's totally immediate gratification. And, you know, and it just continue on. I was hooked up with Live over at Blackford. I didn't go to any of El Paseo at all, if anybody knows about El Paseo. I went to 2 meetings there. One was, and they were both New Year's Eve meetings. God, I'm just like totally losing it again. So I went out anyway. Called the sponsor, hooked up, met a bunch of new guys over Live, and started back in the program. You know, and I started working it. You know, back there every day, going to a meeting. You know, working my steps. You know, did another inventory and cleaned up my house. And this time I really worked 10, 11, and 12 in my life, really hard. You know, I practice every day of praying, and especially in the morning. I found that if I don't contact with God in the morning, first thing, before I brush my teeth, that the rest of my day is fucked. And I continually contact with Him. You know, found that, you know, I still got to work 6 and 7 in my life. I have to change my character defects. If I don't, my wife will let me know, and she'll let me know, hey, you know, you're a little sensitive today. Yeah, I hate that, man. God, I hate that. But that's part of cleaning up my part and cleaning my part up. Yeah, and I looked for the God thing. I wanted to be closer to God. For me, was the best thing was to be ordained. And as soon as I was ordained, as soon as I got my little certificate in the mail, you know, that was like, man, now I can levitate. You know. I am one with God. But you know, that's bullshit. I still got to hook up every day, you know, and I'm only sober for today. You know, there have been many mornings I've woke up in the morning, you know, it's like, today's a good day to get drunk. Why not? You know, and the sun's shining, or, man, it's raining. Hot toddy tonight, you know. Got to get warmed up for the weather, bad weather, whatever it was, you know. I still, today, have to hook up with my God, you know, and to drink still is a good idea, you know, I still dream, I have dreams of drinking dreams, you know, and hey, man, I have a good time, and I wake up and I think, well, you know what, maybe it's time to go have that drinking dream, you know, and, I don't know, now I'm like, you know what, I cheated. What's wrong with cheat list, just in case this happens. All right. I wrote all this down. You, like I said, just in case I lost my place, I wrote it all down. Okay, so we welcome. So hey, okay. Not working. No, it's not. So we're down at the bottom. So anyway, when I came back, that service. Yeah, service, 5 meetings a week at least. It's the service. I really got into service. You know, in the first couple years of my sobriety, I was always in Saturday Night Live. Always had a function going on. It seemed like every weekend there was something happening, and I would never sign my name up, but I'd always be there to do something. That kind of that Secret Service AA kind of stuff, and I found it this time around. You know what? I just hook right up in the meetings. You know, I'm on something. I'm doing something. You know, as long as I'm giving back to Saturday Night Live and giving back to AA, I'm doing my part. You know, I secretaried meetings. I'm the treasurer. I've been 2 years now the treasurer for this group. I work at central office. I have I'm the CPC person over there, and you know. And I got to get into it. I sponsor guys, and that's been the best part of my sobriety, is sponsoring people. Somebody came up to me the other day and said, man, I'm having a hard time sponsoring this guy. He doesn't want to, you know, he's a piece of shit, you know. And I go, well, you know, that's what it says in the big book. That's what we are, you know. And you just deal with it, man. That's the way it is, you know. You go, you hook up with them, you read how it works and working with others, you know, and then go work with your newcomer. And a couple of days later, he's like, wow, man, that was the best thing you could have ever said, you know, because, man, his troubles are way worse than mine, you know. And it usually works that way. For, well, my experience it is. There it went again. Lost a lot of brain cells being out there, man. Damn, a lot of brain cells. Service there, thank you. Yeah. So anyway, I really liked my service part. You know, I've become the food coordinator, I guess you could say, the barbecue coordinator for the group. So all the group functions. You know, I do all the shopping and do all the, you know, hook up all the cooking and stuff like that. That has been really a lot of service for me. A lot of service, and it's very rewarding. Like I said, I get to do for you before I do for myself, and that's really helped me out. And I definitely suggest that you get into service. There's plenty of positions here. There's plenty of positions at central office for you to get into. And there's 800 meetings in this valley a week. There's no reason you can't get a position doing something somewhere, somehow, someplace in this valley. And I don't know where else to go. I'm like, yeah, the big butt. It's a lie, huh? It's a lie. So anyway, I was going to read this part of the big book because I went and got it and showed it, and it's the promises. If we are painstaking about these phases of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know new peace, no peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in self-seeking, selfish things, and gain interest in our own fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurities will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I don't think those are extravagant promises. The only place I've ever had a promise and anybody's ever given me one is here. And this is the only place that a promise has ever came true to me. There are many a times people out there promise me, oh, I'll give you a bag, I'll take care of you, man, you know what, lie for me this time, you know, and I'll take care of you, whatever, you know, I'll take care of you. And it doesn't come true. But you know what, these promises do come true, and, you know, just show up and work a step or two, and you'll be surprised how far you'll go around here, just inside. You know, there was a time when I walked by a mirror, and all I wanted to do was break it. Because, you know, I didn't see what the outside, I always saw the inside. And today I can go to sleep at night. I can look in the mirror at night, or any time actually, and not have to worry about what those things are inside because I've made peace with them. You know, there's things that I can't make amends for, other than being a living amends and just not doing those things ever again. And there's other things that I can actually go out and do and be nice to people, stick my hand out to the newcomer. And or whoever, 12-step anybody, everywhere I go, you know, spread the word of AA to normal people. And with that, I want to thank you all for being here tonight. And you know, all the pretty people stayed here in California today instead of going east and to the convention. And I want to thank you all for being here. Bye.